Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episodes 16 and 17 of season 6. It's Birthright, part 1 and part 2. First one was directed by Weinrich Kolbe, second was Dan Curry. It was written by Brandon Braga in part 1, Rene Echevarria in part 2. Aired back on March 7th, 1993 and March 14th, 1993. In this two-parter, Worf and Data both seek to know more about their fathers, Worf through an adventure to a world inside a Romulan territory, and Data through a newly discovered dream program. Modi Operandis is here to talk about this one, so right after this, me and Modi are going to come back and talk about a birthright.
Bert did not appear in my original experience. This vision is different.
Of course it's different.
It's never the same. Always changing. Unpredictable. Doesn't make sense. What is happening, Father? I don't know, Data. What is happening? We are on the deck of the Enterprise. My cat is present. My potted plant. And my paintings. A beginning. Still a little grounded in the mundane, but showing promise.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the second two-parter of season six so far. We had Chain of Command, and now we're going to follow that up with Birthright, parts 1 and 2. We're going to be doing the same as we did for Chain of Command. Both of these parts are going to be done in one episode, and we're joined, of course, by Modi. How are you?
Hi.
Welcome to our Birthright. Welcome.
I haven't been gone that long. Your listeners are going to be sick of me. I've only been gone for like one episode in between here, I think.
That's true. Our recording is all out of whack, so it's probably bad for me in terms of, I feel like that really affects how I view the seasons I've found now. I just put up my worst of video for season 5, so I'm a little bit behind. But season 5 was the first one I started jumping around in. And I think it really impacts how I remember the seasons, which is kind of weird. But
okay.
That's just, it's like, I have a harder time gauging the flow of the season. Although, we're solidly now into the strong portion of season 6, I think, and that can be said. So we're going to talk about Birthright. And Birthright is, well, I guess we're going to start with the first part. We're going to talk about the two of the same thing. But let's just keep it simple and start about the first part. What did you think of the first part of Birthright?
In comparison to the second part, I don't think it was as good, really.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I kind of wish... they had either made Data's story more meaningful, I guess. I do like everything about Data's like plotline here, and it's really, really interesting in its own right, and has a lot of cool things about it. But I feel like the resolution of that compared to Worf's resolution is nowhere near as significant. You know what I mean? They're not on par. I want them to be on par with each other. They're not.
Yes, I think I kind of agree, and I kind of disagree. I think it's a little weird that they don't continue his storyline in the part two.
Yes, yeah, I wish they had. There seems like there's more to this story that like they didn't want to get into or they didn't develop all the way.
And, yes, yeah, yeah.
But Worf's think over is pretty gigantic too, so it probably just taken over all the time for the second episode, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sort of conflicted. I feel like Worf's storyline is like big in terms of like he takes up a lot of the time of the episodes and everything. The first part is actually, I think, is more a Data episode. Second part is. And I think that despite the fact that Data's story is shorter, I think his story is so much more interesting than Worf's story. I really, 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 really love the Data storyline in this episode. And I think it's funny to me because the Data storyline, I barely remember that this had happened. But I feel like it's the show reaching a point that it's never actually gotten to before. And they kind of shoot themselves in the foot in the last scene where Data's talking to Bashir about it. They kind of shoot themselves in the foot there by saying that he got to it accidentally. He got to this level where I don't think they should have done that. I think they should have had Data just as his growth of a character has allowed him to reach this stage of
right.
His
it's something without himself. Like he didn't do anything to reach this higher plane of existence now.
Right. They just say it was an accident. And it's like that kind of, I'm like, oh, I wish they hadn't done that. I wish they
it
hadn't
takes something
that.
Away from Data's struggle.
Right.
In a way. Yeah.
But I just think it's a little artsy. I don't think it's too artsy, but I think it's so unique for the show that there's no conflict in the storyline and it's just purely enjoying sort of almost a character wrapping up his story at this point because there's mm-hmm. not much place for Data to go after this. Like, him getting this ability is kind of the end of his story in a weird way. Do you agree?
Yeah,
or
it
disagree?
Kind of is. This should be the resolution of... I mean, there should be some type of resolution that evolves out of this. They never kind of revisit it, though.
No, they don't.
I feel like this reminds me. I was just thinking this kind of reminds me of like the stuff in the new version of Battlestar Galactica, where it's like all this like symbolism and stuff they throw into it, and you're thinking it's leading someplace, and it doesn't really pay off ever.
Yeah,
and that seems like it's going on here. I loved everything about with the dream and the bird, and you know, Data being the three-eyed raven. I liked all that stuff, I wish they would have had some payoff in part two, maybe, or make this evolve into something in a later episode, but
yes,
this doesn't seem to go anywhere.
One review I was reading said that this was the show kind of hinting at what a serialized show would have been like, which I think the Data story is really about that. It's really about like his sort of evolution as a character. And I think I agree that it's really, I don't think it's the fault of the episode. It's a fault that they don't continue this plot because this seems like a character shattering moment for Data, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's really a drastic change for him. And watching it this time, I was really just struck by how it's purely about the character emotion and feeling like sort of celebrating for the Data character at this point. Like he's reached a whole new thing. And it's also by far the best use of Soong as a character.
Yeah, I would agree. Like it's very cryptic and you get a lot of character from Soong out of this, I think.
You do.
More than anywhere else, really.
I mean, he had an appearance in Brothers, and I think he's had one other appearance as a holodeck creation.
Yeah.
The problem with Brothers is that he was just the wacky mad scientist.
Right.
And it didn't mean anything. This one, he thematically represents sort of being an agent of chaos, which is what he's telling Data being human is kind of about. Like he tells him there's no reason, you're never going to figure out what your dreams mean, and that's what it means to be human. And Data is spending the episode trying to analyze the situation, right? Mm-hmm. And the appearance of Soong, and it's the best appearance of Soong, is he's basically sort of a, you can't explain this, so don't even try. And that's him explaining to Data what it means to be sort of...
And that's the beauty of it kind of thing.
That's
yeah,
the beauty.
Exactly.
Like, and I think that's the beauty of the storyline is that it doesn't amount to anything, but it means everything at the same time.
Yeah. The Data plotline is super interesting here. And I guess in the first part, I think that the... Yeah, I do think that the Worf stuff is overshadowed by the strong Data plotline, for sure.
Yeah.
It's super interesting. Like, the ideas of Data becoming his own culture when he has that talk with Picard in his ready room.
Yep.
Of that he's a culture of one. And he has to find his own meaning and stuff. And then it's like you start thinking about it and it's like this obviously is coming from within Data's mind. So, you know, Dr. Soong is not actually have done this. This isn't programmed. This isn't history. He's making up this vision in his mind himself.
Yes.
And that's when he's drawing pictures of it. He may actually just be creating new memories inside of the dream world he's going into.
Right, exactly.
So it's really interesting stuff going on here, and I just wish they would have paid it off a little bit more somehow.
Yeah, the Soong program seems to just be to inspire him to get to this kind of creative point. Where, and the Soong program is kind of sitting there as a marker of when he gets to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like unlocked.
Okay. Right, he unlocks it, and it's like, oh, now you've hit this level. They shoot themselves in the foot by saying it was an accident, which is stupid. They shouldn't have done that. But I don't think it ruins what was going on. And it even ties into, I should have mentioned at the top, this episode heavily, not heavily, but it largely focuses on DS9 and DS9 characters. The Enterprise is docked at Deep Space Nine at the very start. And they do something really interesting. They bring on Bashir, who not only shows the difference in tone between the shows, where he breaks the rules to get something done that he wants to get done, he also is interested in Data more in how human he is than how fast of a computer he is, which is really fascinating. That's like I really enjoyed how they sort of turned that on its head.
Yeah, they might have picked one of the best characters that exemplifies that difference between the two series, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
As far as like the difference of the type of doctors you get and that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. He's totally different from Crusher, with a totally different philosophy on how things are gonna go.
I kind of wish they just had more Deep Space Nine stuff in this. Honestly, I want to see what everybody else was doing on Deep Space Nine. I want to see what everyone else is getting up to.
How did they not have an O'Brien? They mention O'Brien, but they don't have
didn't
him.
Bring him. They didn't bring him back. He's right there.
It was so, yeah, it was just, Geordi doesn't like the food, so he makes some crack about it. He's going to tell Chief O'Brien to fix the replicators. I was like, how does Colmini not just have a single 5-second scene where he walks into that scene and shakes her hand or something?
Just like, just looking disillusioned when Geordi tells him that.
It is very, very upset. But yeah, I wish there was more Deep Space Nine. I wish there was more, I don't know if you realize it's James Cromwell who plays the alien.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, his voice sounded super familiar.
Yeah, yeah. So
he's really good, too.
Yep. He was previously played the guy in The Hunted. He played the prime minister of that episode where the super soldiers are hunting people. He's also Babe the Pig Farmer in L.A. yep. Confidential, the corrupt cop. And also, obviously, First Contact's Zefren Cochran. So he's no stranger to Trek. Yeah, I mean, we'll just go on the Data thing for just another minute. I think that I love the way it was filmed. I love all the dream sequences, even though in the Blu-ray definition, it's clear that it is not Data laying on the bed when they do those double shots.
Yeah, the double shots kind of suffer a little bit for that, but most of it's pretty good.
It is. I think it's just so subtle. Like when he starts to dream about it, and Soong's like, why don't you describe what you're doing? And Data's like, well, I'm on the bridge. My cat's here. My plant is here that's in my apartment.
My potted plant is here. That's his plant. My potted plant is here.
His potted plant. And Soong's response is just so perfect. It's like, you're starting to get it, but you're still so mundane in the details. It's like, I just thought it was such a perfect sort of Data. He's developing these dreaming creative possibilities, but he's starting out with, these are the things I recently saw. So here they are in my dream as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's. I guess we can talk about the Worf storyline. So this kicks off.
Yeah, these don't connect at all. Actually, really, I mean, the name of the episode is what connects them.
Sort of dealing with fathers, it. I guess.
Yeah, the fathers is what connects it, I suppose. But I feel like either episode could be called. Actually, Birthlight applies better to Data's plotline than it does to Worf's here.
Yeah,
I think, too.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, I think it's interesting that you could have pulled either of these. They don't need to go in the same episode, basically.
No, no. This could be something different altogether.
Yeah, you could have separated either one and it would have been fine. So they're loosely thematically connected. But it's weird that the Data storyline stops after part one.
Mm-hmm.
It's B that they don't really interact with each other at all,
they have a conversation, actually, which is weird because it's like Data giving advice to Worf, or Worf giving advice to Data, which almost never happens.
Yep, I
for
love
any reason.
Every time that those two have a scene together, I think it's fantastic. They're such a great foil against each other.
Yeah, that's true, but it doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. I which is weird. You think that it would, but they you can play their relationship in a lot of different ways, and I think that they don't interact in the sense that the stories are not intertwined with each other in like any way whatsoever. You know, it's not like the Data plot is the B plot that's going to resolve Worf's storyline.
Yeah.
Which
I mean, it gives Worf the, like,
motivation.
Yeah, it gives him the expressing what he's feeling kind of thing. Gives him the opportunity to do that without, like, making a stupid scene.
Yeah.
And makes it good, actually, I think, actually.
But. I think so. I think it's kind of a maturing storyline where they don't feel the need to just hammer the stories together. They mm-hmm. can just allow one conversation to spin the entire second story off. And that's all that they need out yeah. of it. I think that's pretty strong. Not a lot of Picard, not a lot of Troy, not a lot of all that. It's really a Data and Worf storyline. So, what do you think of the opening Deep Space Nine sort of appearance here? Let's talk a little bit about Deep Space Nine and how it sort of fits into the Next Generation episode.
Yeah, I mean, I love that show, it was great to see it from a different perspective. And seeing what other people say about it, because you really only get the crew's perspective on it for the most part on Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
So you get to see what the outsiders think about it, what the outsiders think about them, that kind of thing. I really enjoyed that actually. Again, I would have spent you know a few more episodes just hanging out, like have plot lines revolving around Deep Space Nine that the other characters are, you know, meanwhile with Dr. Crusher,
right?
Kind of thing. Yeah, have that going yep. on. See those episodes too. I want to see that.
Yeah, I think the most shocking thing to me about Deep Space Nine is. This is obviously seen through like a TNG perspective kind of, so it's not totally Deep Space Nine, but mm-hmm. they really separated the two shows very, very differently, like tonal wise. The characters are very different from each other. And it's just like they got that difference right away. It's not like it's something that developed over the course of the show. Like Deep Space Nine was developed very, very differently. We're going to get to that eventually when we get to Deep Space Nine, at least I will. But I mean, it's fascinating to me. They didn't just copy TNG, which is really, really like they had to do that. It was the smart move to do. But they went in a very different direction just with how these characters interact. Like the Doctor is just people. They're just breaking the rules to get it done. They just want to do all this weird stuff. The station looks so different. It's so like dingy. And this is, I guess, the only time that you're going to see Deep Space Nine in high definition, right? Because they're never going to remaster the Deep Space Nine.
No, I suppose not.
Yeah, so yeah. that's kind of a reason enough to watch this one. Yeah, I just think it's really, like, the fact that they eat real food at restaurants is just interesting. You know, the promenade has, like, food available.
Wasn't that, like, there was a plotline early on that show, too, of they didn't have the replicators working and stuff like that, so they had to, like,
worry about
food supplies and stuff like that.
They'd eat rations and everything like that, and bring on the other stuff. Yeah, I think it's just, it's nifty. It's a good way to bring on this character of Jalad Shrek, or whatever the hell his name is, the Cromwell character. What did you think of booting off Worf's story? What did you think of Worf's story? We'll switch into that.
I did enjoy Worf's story as well.
Again, I don't think just in the first part. Yeah, sorry.
The first part here. The first part, it was, I don't know. It was like, you can obviously tell that he's in denial. You know what he's going to end up doing anyways. You know, there's no plot unless he goes to follow whatever this guy says. It's just kind of interesting that it, I don't know. I mean, first of all, I don't know what exactly this guy was going to charge Worf for this information. I'm kind of curious about that. Yeah. Like, what does Worf own really? But yeah, it's never
mentioned either. He's never
There's no price named.
No, there's no
price. I'm glad they worked their way around that because Worf's just like I did like Worf's negotiating tactics though too.
Just dangling him over the edge.
Yeah. I'll pay you after.
Yeah,
that guy's probably not gonna live through this.
Yeah, he needs to come up with a better bartering system as opposed to just upset the guy and then have him threaten you with death and you have to pay him virtually nothing or whatever. I think that.
Not a good way to build relationships with informants.
No, really. No, it's not a customer service industry that this guy's involved with. I think that the part one Worf story completely revolves around the fact that Worf is conflicted by his father potentially being captured by the Romulans, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal because I mean in the second part it's kind of what the whole impetus for the whole thing is about in that these people have to. Pretend that they're dead so they don't dishonor their families that are still alive.
Right.
And that's the whole conflict with Worf here is that he's just in denial that his father would allow himself to be captured and that it doesn't really resonate with an audience, I feel like, as much. as the later stuff about, you know, being true to your heritage and that kind of thing, where the second half of the episode is all about. But the early stuff about it just doesn't. I don't think it resonates as well with an audience necessarily.
No, I think that it's talking again about sort of storylines that I think, like how I considered the Data story here to sort of be the end of the Data arc, as little arc as there is for some of these characters. I feel like Redemption, the season 4 or whatever it was, whenever that was, the Redemption arc kind of ended Worf's storyline in a weird way, at least in terms of this honor thing. I mean, his father being out there potentially is interesting. His, you know, sort of inner turmoil about whether or not he should be happy that his father's alive as a Klingon, like a Klingon should have killed himself. Why would, mm-hmm. or died in battle or whatever. Like, why should I be happy that he's there? And eventually his humanity breaks through when he talks to Data and he talks to Troy and everything. And he realizes that he wants to go out there and see if his father's actually out there. So he books a ride. He hitches a ride out to this. I guess we should explain the plot. So apparently this information this guy is selling is that the Romulans at the Khitomer massacre captured a bunch of Klingons, including Worf's father, and they have them at this secret prison base that no one knows about. So Worf's going to go out there and break in. He gets to the prison. He meets a young girl there. He peeps her for a little while as she bathes. And then he finds this prison camp where there's these older Klingons who are captured from Khitomer, and they have children. And then they betray Worf, and the Romulans capture him, and they say, "You're never going to leave." And that's the end of episode one.
Yeah.
So now going from there, now we can freely just break into part two about this. I'm going to just say what I think the weakest. I think part one is better than part two of Birthright.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that the problem with the second half, and you can respond, is the fact that they don't go all the way with Moog being there is a huge letdown. And I think they didn't make the right choice there.
But that, I think that's a slam against part one, though, because he turns out that he's gone in part one. And it's like it's all this build up to a payoff that doesn't actually happen. Like, the actual struggle here is I'm coming to terms with my father dishonoring himself. And then it turns out, oh, he's dead. So you didn't do anything. Now you're stuck here.
Right.
And then, part two is completely tangential to part one, really.
Yes.
When you really get into that.
The problem.
What the plot is actually of part one.
The problem with the plot one is that it kind of just throws away everything that happens to Worf part one. Like, the him having to come to this decision is the only interesting part about that story in part one. Mm-hmm. So to just be like, yeah, never mind. Actually, that didn't happen at all.
It's cool.
It's just like, oh, well, that's a huge letdown. It also, it doesn't give Worf a personal enough stake in what happens in part two. I understand that they try to push it as that way, but I think part two is a little bit confused about what it's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It does a very good job of giving both sides are correct and incorrect at the same time. In this part two, which is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. The Romulan and Worf.
Yeah, I do like that too.
Worf is just a racist in part two.
Oh, yeah. Heavy racist. I even wrote it down. I was like, wow, Worf is exceedingly racist.
Worf is hugely racist, but he also is sort of pushing a comfortable prison is still a prison thing, which is a good argument. The Romulan has the counter argument, I did something that no other government has ever been able to do, and I brought peace between our two people. Which is a good argument, but he's also incorrect because the only way he can do it is by having them in prison, basically.
Right. He's at the end of the day, he's still the warden kind of thing.
Yes.
And yeah, regardless of how well you get along with your prisoners, you're still the warden.
You're still in
charge. There's still a power structure there, yeah.
So I think that's a really great central conflict. The problem is that they keep going back to the Worf trying to push culture on them. And it's like, I think it's more interesting if they didn't do that and they showed Worf more about how much because Worf is just an ideologue of a Klingon, right? Mm-hmm. We've gone over that before.
Yeah.
If the kids had showed him that it's different than that, like that they're not any worse off just because, like, outside of being in prison, which I think is the way they should have gone with it, they're not any worse off than he seems to think that they are. And they don't really go that way. What'd you think?
Well, I liked it first because I thought his whole seeding descent kind of thing was a tactic to escape. Like, that's what a good Klingon would not let himself be imprisoned. So I thought that he was trying to like sow the dissent so that people would rise up and he could escape, kind of thing. And then I realized it was kind of about that. He was starting to take on this fatherly role of showing them how to be Klingon. And you're right. I mean, if they had done something more interesting of that, the truth being somewhere in the middle between, you know, peace and the war race, it might have been more interesting resolution, probably.
Yeah.
Where he would learn something from them, they would learn something from him, and they could figure out something in the middle. Because, I mean, you do have one character here who, by her nature, is stuck between both worlds. She can't leave the prison without being ostracized by everyone.
And I don't think she leaves at the end.
She doesn't. Yeah, she's stuck there. She's still stuck in the prison, and it doesn't resolve that. So you need to have a plot here that allows her to come to terms with herself.
Yes.
I think.
Yep.
But it doesn't, the way that Worf preaches it, there's no middle ground.
Yes. And I think that's a big letdown of the thing, because I spent probably 80% of the second half being like, you know, this Romulan's kind of got a good point. It's only once he finally is like, I'm going to kill people so that they can't get out of my prison.
Exactly. I'm going to kill Worf to keep the peace, kind of thing.
And yeah.
Then he becomes back to being the actual warden again.
Right.
That's the problem.
And I think that he's, what they've done is like, it's a really interesting just examining how these two races that, as Worf says, have been at war for centuries, can actually go about fixing it. We'll come back to this. I did want to ask your opinion about, we've talked before about the Romulans, because you watched Face of the Enemy with me.
Yeah.
Do you think that, I think this continues to be a thing. I might just be a broken record. Tell me to shut up if I am. But the lack of characterization about what the Romulans think is kind of a problem here.
Yeah, I could see that. Again, I stated my opinion on the Romulans back in that episode too. Go back and listen to it if you haven't. But my basic thing is that there's two hierarchies of Romulan ethics, and there's the military side of it, and there's the actual like morality side of it, which is just the everyday people. And here, you don't know. I don't really get a sense that these guys are still Romulans, if you know what I mean. Like, the people who are Romulan by heritage aren't necessarily Romulans anymore.
Okay.
Given that they've abandoned their ideals and have intermingled with Klingons, they obviously aren't very good Romulans then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. If that's, maybe that's not part of what their whole ethics is. And maybe the, you know, the, what am I thinking? The xenophobia is not part of their ideology.
Maybe,
but
yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. I just don't know. These guys aren't Romulans, in my opinion.
Right, and I don't disagree with you. Like, I think that you can draw a conclusion about what they are. I kind of have a problem with them because like Worf is constantly going through this thing. The Romulans have no honor. Where what this guy did, it seems to be like more honorable than pretty much anything Worf has ever done. Like, you know, he threw away his life so that people could survive, basically.
Again, because Worf's a racist.
Right. I mean,
because they can't be honorable because he's a Romulan.
They say
except he's acting honorable.
Right. So, they say they're treacherous, and they kind of are. They're kind of treacherous.
Yeah.
But they're not completely dishonorable people. They always seem to have a very sort of moral code. And Face of the Enemy was that guy was like so enamored with them because of their morality.
Well, that's the thing. Like, humans and Romulans would get along way less, I think, than Klingons and Romulans would. I mean, to me, Klingons and Romulans are two sides of the same coin that just hate each other, but even though their cultures are very, very similar.
I totally agree with that. I think that's the biggest problem. I don't see enough of a reason for the Romulans and the Klingons to not like each other, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll buy into it because that's the way the story tells it. I mean, it's not like it's not
whatever
like hatred
history's
always
there, yeah.
Right? No, like hatred has to be logical or something like that. But I think that if you had defined, like, that could have made the episode a little bit more thematic if the Romulan and Klingon ideals clash a little bit more than they do. Mm-hmm. But it's not a huge deal by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'll go with the other sort of minor quibble I have. I sound like I hate this second part. I don't. I think it's a good episode. I just don't think it's as good as the first part. But did you buy the older... Do you think it was a good idea to have the older Klingons still be present in the prison? Do you buy...
That's a good question. That is a good question. Because you need the antagonist that's going to stand in the way of these... I mean, if they were there, Worf can convert them pretty easily by being the strong presence that shows them the way to be Klingon.
Yep.
But if the grown-ups, quote unquote, were all gone, I don't think there'd be any conflict with her necessarily.
No, I think about it. I was just wondering about it because the older Klingons, to me, it's problematic that the older Klingons kind of gave up. And it doesn't seem very Klingon, where I can buy if they had young children who were raised in this place that they wouldn't have that sort of Klingon, fuck you, I'm going to fight to the death kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was only the younger Klingons, I could see the conflict would have to be Worf going there and sort of trying to work with these people who have no other way of knowing something. I don't really understand why the older Klingons gave up so easily, when that seems to be the very antithesis of being a Klingon.
Well, it goes back to the first part where Worf is so conflicted that his father didn't die in battle, and that it's such dishonor to his entire generation. Like, you would be like, Alexander's children would still be dishonored by that if his grandfather, great-grandfather was, you know, taken captive. So apparently it's a big deal. And again, I don't think that resonates with an audience very well, because it doesn't really seem like a big deal.
Right. It's not totally relatable. Because
they do explain away how they got captured and allowed themselves to get captured pretty easily. They say, oh, we were knocked unconscious, we didn't have a choice, and then we tried to kill ourselves and they wouldn't let us. So
then they tried to hunger strike. I feel like the Klingons either would have fought, like they would have, every chance they got, they would have had a guard. Escape.
Yeah, just try to go over the wall every single day. And
right.
You know, if you get killed doing it, then you've achieved your honorable death.
Yes, exactly. And also when the start of part 2, when Worf is talking to the older guy and he's like, Worf's like, I came here to find Moog because, you know, I think that it's worth coming out here and doing that.
The older Klingon
is just like, if my son was here, I hope he'd have the balls to kill me. It's basically what
it's like,
said.
Oh my god,
yeah,
it's such a dig on Worf.
It is, and it doesn't make sense as to why those older Klingons have given up so much.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like somebody. Yeah, he says that line, and then the rest of the episode disproves it.
Why don't they just kill each other? You know, yeah. just fight.
Choke each other out, and the last guy alive just has to deal with it.
Right.
That's the honorable one that stays alive, and that's the honor he has.
It took
like 4 days before they wanted to kill Worf. How long did you guys try to escape? Doesn't seem like you tried long enough.
No, that's the thing. Do you think that's a problem, or do you think that I'm just sort of barking up the
wrong? I think you're right. They did give up. Wait, it doesn't make a lot of sense that they would give up like that.
Yeah.
At all, ever. Even if the Klingon High Council or whatever wants to disavow them, still try to get out of there. Still try to have your honorable death for your own sakes.
Yes.
But I mean, then it kind of paints them a cowardly light in that, like, oh, we're only gonna die in battle if someone's gonna know about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's what it comes down to then.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of disguise it by they don't want to bring shame on their families back home, but
yeah.
they're also
but if
like,
the
well,
families
we...
back home know they don't know they're alive, then your own honor in your own mind is all that's there. Like,
right.
Your honor to yourself is all that's there. So you obviously don't actually believe that. You're just culturally, it's the superego versus the id or the ego, you know
yes,
what I mean? Like
yep.
it's what the world thinks of you, not what you think of yourself kind of thing.
I mean, I would have had the kids tell the story to Worf about how their parents continued to fight. They were there long enough that they had more kids basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of them, the woman had the, you know, this half Romulan, half Klingon who grew up. But I would have had the parents be such a problem that the Romulans decide the only way to deal with it is to kill them, which would have tied into the ending, because that's mm-hmm. how the Romulans get rid of problems. Mm-hmm. And then they would have kept the kids and been like, well, we can't kill the kids. We'll just raise them in this place where they don't have any attachment to.
Yeah, that would be an interesting plot twist. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
If they had done that at the origin, then Worf stumbles upon this tribe of Klingons raised by Romulans?
Right, yes, exactly.
That'd be interesting.
And they all have Romulan haircuts.
They look ridiculous.
I think that would have... I don't know. What did you... You said you liked the second part. What did you sort of enjoy about it?
I liked the kind of insurgent angle of Worf being the dissenter and Worf being the rebel for once, because he's such a law-abiding guy, generally. But when it comes to it and he can actually be someone that's a little more roguish, it's kind of fun, I think. Like,
yeah,
he seems like a bad boy in this, and it's not his style usually.
He gets to wear his ninja outfit.
He looks like Luke Skywalker from Jedi. I wrote that down.
He does when he's like jumping over,
wearing the turtleneck, yeah,
over banisters and stuff. Yep. Yeah, that's. I mean, I think that's a. I like the storyline of part two, of like where this is sort of going and what they're trying to do. I like the idea of Worf teaching the kids about Klingon culture, and it's also a little subtle in that it's not all about, like, I don't think Worf actively ever tells them to rebel and try to kill the Romulans.
No, he just shows them a different way. Yeah, like he just introduces and plants the seed. That's why I thought at first it'd be interesting if it was just a tactic to kind of bring down the prison from the inside.
Yep.
But it seems like he actually cares about the kids and stuff at the end. So.
Yeah, so yeah, that weak sauce mother.
Weak.
Yeah, I like the...
A true Klingon would have killed all of them.
That's right. Yeah,
for he would. A week.
When a true Klingon doesn't wait to be executed. He
right.
He just goes into it. The thing about the I just like the fact that it's a lot of the myth stories. He tells the kids the stories. He teaches them what the songs mean. Mm-hmm. I kind of have a little bit of a problem with how quickly it has to happen quickly, but how quickly the young male. Like switches and is like, now I'm a Klingon, and he starts.
Oh, he gets a taste of blood and he knows the songs. Yeah,
yeah. He's like, I don't smell it. Oh, wait a minute, I smell everything. I'm a Klingon. Like, and it just mm-hmm. kills the pig and goes after it. And he shows up wearing the armor at the end, which is a little odd. I don't know, but I just wish it had more. I think the actor who plays the Romulan is really good, and I wish it had more of a focus on that conflict between the two of them. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's short conflict between the two of them. I think the scenes between them are very good. I like the scene where he pours two drinks and Worf, like, sort of regretfully, but he's like very, he doesn't want to take it, but he takes the drink eventually when they're talking to each other. I like that little touch. It's nice. I like the fact that Worf's racism is played up. Like, it's ridiculous how racist he is towards the Romulans.
Yeah, in comparison to everybody else here who's getting along really well, it's very apparent.
And he did kill his parents. I mean, I have to...
Right, he's got a grudge. I mean, he has his reasons.
Yes.
But still.
As abstract as they are, because you've never really seen anything to do with it.
True.
But it's... yeah, you've never...
Then he's, like, disgusted by the girl as soon as he finds out that she's... a Romulan, and then he sleeps on it. He's like, oh, because I'm cool with it. It's fine. It's not your fault.
Did you think
it's not your fault.
I thought they did a pretty good job of blending a Romulan Klingon face. Like, even before her ears.
You could tell something's off right away. Like, it doesn't seem like she's very... I mean, there's varying, like, ridges on Klingons, but it's...
Right.
It's right away, it seems apparent something's different.
Yeah, she's a little bit more, like, triangular, which is mm-hmm. the way I think of, like, the Romulan head with their goofy hair and, like, sort of pointy chin, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job of all that stuff. I would have cut down a little bit on the Worf Tai Chi because that makes me laugh.
There's a lot of Tai Chi.
There's a lot in this, and the people who start copying him when they're in the courtyard in the background, they start doing the motions and everything like that. Yeah, I would have gotten rid of that a little bit. I have another question for you about this one. Why are some of the Romulan guards young?
Very good question. Like, I thought maybe those are like brothers of the younger kids there.
Oh,
that are like half Romulan.
Oh, and they're also
guards. They look more Romulan. Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe.
Huh.
But yeah. Again, like the Romulans are sending new guards in for this place. It seems like the whole thing's off the register with both camps. So.
Yeah, I thought the Romulan government just said you get over there and you do whatever you want. We're not going to bother you, but you only get the
out.
People
yeah.
who are with you in the first place.
I mean, if they had found out, they're not sending, if they had found out he had married a Klingon, they probably wouldn't be helping him out at all anymore. So
that's
he's
true.
On his own. You can tell he's on his own.
Yeah, so I guess the ending proves that the Romulan government kind of is aware of them still because they send a warbird to pick up.
Yeah, where did that come from?
That was kind of weird. I thought they should have had an alien freighter do it.
They did say there's a supply drop coming in. Like the kids, the younger guy says that there's a supply trip coming in tomorrow.
Oh,
that you can get out here with. So I mean, so they're bringing him supplies still. So they have some type of trade system set up with them.
Yeah,
still.
Whenever I hear there's a supply, I don't picture a warbird bringing supplies. Like I picture
mostly going to use. Yeah.
Yeah, I pictured like another alien species or something being used for it. Like the Ferengi would be involved in that kind of stuff.
Maybe.
Huh.
I really wanted the half Romulan girl to show up on the teleporter at the end.
Like, oh, did
they
you?
They showed Worf and the boy, and I just wanted her to not be there, and then maybe pull back and she's there, because really the Federation's the only place she can really go at this point.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, she's not going to be trusted because she's a Romulan within the Federation, but still, she'd have a better chance, I think, than with either of the other two camps.
Yes, yeah, she's with people who are you know, honestly, they're not long for this earth the way that these older folk are getting.
She's going to be all alone there if everyone else left.
Yeah, that's a good point. Why wouldn't she go with the Federation? I guess it's just that she doesn't know, but I guess it's supposed to be, you know, sort of tragic that she can't be there.
Yeah, maybe.
And also, Worf's relationship status would be screwed up in the, going forward.
It's true. It's true.
So one other question for you. I was reading a couple of reviews, and they thought that the Worf and Picard conversation at the end, that Picard was aware that Worf is lying to him.
He seemed to have a little glimmer in his eye of oh, I get it. Yeah, no one survived. Yeah, okay.
That's interesting. Sure. I was watching it, like, sort of thinking about it, and I had the impression that Picard bought it.
I think I was projecting, yeah. I had the exact same thought that the reviewer had for a moment, and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm just projecting my own thing onto that, and it's not actually what was going on there. Like, because if that's true, and the very first person that Worf tells this lie to
Caesar
doesn't believe him and sees right through it, it's not going to last very long. So I think just for the sake of the show and the continued colony there, you got to assume that that Picard bought it.
I 100% agree. I don't think the story is served by Picard seeing through the lie at all.
And like, he might be too smart for the room kind of thing, but still, like, he's not going to show it. I think he's smart enough to not show it then,
right?
If that's the case.
Yes, yes. That's something you play it totally straight and have the audience wonder.
And that's exactly what happened, I think, is what happened. He played it straight, and we all was like, oh, he knows.
He knows, yeah. Because he's never not known anything that's going on.
Right, exactly.
Before.
I take him as the guy who knows everything, so.
Yeah, I was a little, I was really just watching it, just being like, he has to buy it. Like, it doesn't serve the story otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I think the final line of everyone died at Kittimer is just such a wonder. It's like, it's a great ending line for that, knowing that what we know about what we just saw for the past 2 hours or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting little thing. Well, I think that's, we've talked this one in the ground. It's kind of a neat little two-parter. I think it's intriguing. We'll go to final thoughts. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Modi are going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for Birthright Parts 1 and 2.
Well, Worf, you've had quite an effect on the young people.
I have done nothing more than show them who they are.
No, you have shown them what you want them to be. Tell me this. You know of any place, any time in history, when Klingons and Romulans have lived together in peace? We have despised each other, fought each other. For centuries, except here, on this remote planet, Romulans and Klingons live together in harmony. No government, no leader, has ever done what I have done here.
And what about Tok? I saw what happened to him when he caught the scent of his prey on the wind. For the first time in his life, he felt powerful, and that is what he has been denied living here. And that is what you have tried to take away from him. Now, you may be content to sit here in the jungle and wither to old age, but Tok and the others have tasted what it is to feel truly alive, and they will not give that up now.
Enough of this. We could talk all night and not convince each other.
Yeah, I don't know. I was intrigued by Birthright, which I think is good. Like, I'm at a point now where not much is surprising me in TNG anymore. They've sort of oiled the machinery down, and they sort of have a humming thing going here. They spit out reliable episodes, everything, every week. And this one was surprising to me. The first part in particular was surprising to me, and I think that the second part had a lot of potential that, well, it was a good episode. I don't know if it really followed through all the way for me, but we're going to rate the episode now, guys. If you're on YouTube, you can click in the upper right-hand corner. There's a little box there or a little circle. You can click it, and the poll option will come up. You can vote on what you think overall this one would get. Modi, I'm going to ask you to break down the two parts.
Oh,
and
boy.
Give each one a score
for each? Oh, yes. That's unfair. I was going to say, if we were to combine these together as one thing, it's obviously a 5. If I have to break it down, it's going to be a little more nuanced than that. I think I'd still lean towards a 5 for both episodes, though, because they're both very solid. I like them both in their own ways. The Data stuff is super interesting. There's points to be made that the Data stuff could have been continuing to part 2. there's points to be made that the Worf thing could have been contained to its own, maybe extra long episode or something like that. But I think that those kind of offset each other to make a five. On average, it's a five between the two episodes, so I'll give them both a five.
Cool. I'd have a hard time averaging maybe to a five. I think the average would knock it down, but I really love the first part. The Data storyline, I think, is like sublime for this mm-hmm. show. I give the first part, the first part's kind of a weak five, and the second part is a strong three to me. They would average out to probably around a four or something like that, but I really, really love the first part, and the second part is good to watch, interesting. I just had too many questions while I was watching it about what was going on, as opposed to the, you know, ironically, the first one, which brings up a bunch of questions and doesn't really answer them, but I don't need the answers to those questions.
Then that's the whole point of that episode, too,
right?
Is that you don't want the answers to the questions.
Right, because that's not the point of it.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I was watching the first part and thinking about the podcast, and Picard has the whole thing about, like, you know, you have to find something you enjoy and sort of analyze it, and think about it. And all this stuff is like, oh, it's kind of like the podcast. Like, he's kind of talking about the podcast, what I'm doing here.
He knew.
He knew. And it was like, it was a nice little sentiment from Picard, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of clever and nice. And yeah, the Data stuff, the room gets a little dusty if you are into these characters, I think. It's very, very interesting. Cool. Well, thank you very much, sir, for coming on and talking about Birthright.
Anytime.
Guys, check out Modi's channel. It's in YouTube. I'll put a link in down below. You can go to YouTube and search Modi Operandis, and his channel will come up. Got a bunch of playthroughs, RimWorld, if you guys are into that, obviously. And if you guys are on YouTube, like and the comments appreciated. If you're on iTunes, rating review helps get the show out there. Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/thePenske Podcast. And for a couple dollars a month, you get exclusive content. We do podcasts about other stuff like Galaxy Quest and Event Horizon might be coming up this month. I don't know. There's a couple contenders. Anyway, go there, facebook.com/thePenske Podcast, and leave a like or whatever goes on Facebook. You can do that there as well. Things are so much simpler before you had all these social media stuff to go through.
Yeah, you got a lot
going
on now, man.
Jesus Christ, I got to remember all this stuff. So many things to fill out online. Anyway, thank you, sir, again, for coming on and talking about Birthright. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem. My pleasure.
We'll probably have you for one or two more episodes in season six, even though we're moving towards the end. There's like eight episodes left. And then after this, what the hell is coming up next? What is it? Oh, it's Starship Mine, the Die Hard in space. Okay.
Nice.
Excellent. Guys, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time.